coming up next. Minding Your Business with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
Some of the most pressing issues for small businesses involve legal matters, deciding on a business structure, trademarking a name, preventing people from plagiarizing content, and protecting intellectual property. My guest today is Danny Bronski, an attorney who works with startups and growing technology companies. His specialties are trademark law and intellectual property, and he has some unusual cases to share with us involving social media. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or give us a shout on Twitter or Facebook at MYB Media. Before we introduce our guest, here's Locker Gnome's take on some of the things you can and cannot do with social media.
Breaking the law! Breaking the law! No one wants to do that. I would like to keep you from getting in trouble with the law, especially with social media. And you're thinking, social media can get me in trouble? Yeah. Do you understand that some people have been fined or even put into jail for sending out tweets that were seemingly benign? Yeah, it can happen. And you know that Pinterest website we've talked about? It's grown in popularity recently. A great place to discover new images. And share images and repin images, you could get in trouble if you are pinning images to the website without getting permission. I don't know if you knew that, but if you don't own the content, you may not want to share it that way. People have asked, hey, Chris, do you mind if I record a video about an article you did on Locker Gnome? No, I don't mind at all. You should actually do that, and I appreciate it because it gets attention out about the videos and the articles we've done. Sometimes people will want to copy the text from a Locker Gnome article and paste it into their own blog post on their own site. That's a no-no. Nobody likes that, including Google. That can get you delisted from their search results. Well, Pinterest allows you to pin images from one site or another, and if you're taking an image and copying it to your account when you were not licensed to copy that image, you could be in trouble. Big trouble. You think about photographers who sell their images and who have licenses saying, hey, no, all rights reserved. You cannot use this anywhere else without my permission because they make money from those images. Well, the bottom line is you don't want to get in trouble on Pinterest. Make sure you own the content that you're sharing. 110%.
For more information, visit the LockerGnome.com website and look for their article on using Pinterest without breaking the law. My guest, Danny Bronski, graduated from Duke with a law degree and MBA in 2002. At school, Danny co-founded the Duke Law and Technology Review and served as its first managing editor. Before Duke, Danny had earned degrees summa cum laude in finance and psychology from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. After law school, Danny decided to skip town rather than become fodder for a large New York City law firm. The newly minted lawyer gave away nearly all of his possessions, bonfired his textbooks, and drove till he could drive no longer. He landed in Seattle with the mere clothes on his back and the possessions that would fit in his car. He was dreaming of doing things a better way, free from the tyranny of what he calls the mediocre and the staid. Danny's practice centers on trademark law and technology law. Most of his clients are in Seattle, and he's worked with international clients on intellectual property issues. Joining me now is Danny Bronski. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
You've called yourself an entrepreneurial lawyer. Why is that?
I myself am an entrepreneur. One thing you didn't mention is I actually had a startup myself before I started my law practice. And I was always interested in business and basically growing businesses. I'm not particularly interested in corporate America. Never was. For me, it was really, if I was going to practice law, it was really the only way that I would be happy practicing is to work with entrepreneurs and growing businesses.
So what was that business you started?
It was called Veritranslate, actually, and it was a web-based translation company.
Did you run it for long, or what happened with it?
I ran it for about 2.5 years, and it actually was profitable. What I mostly did was broker translators around the world, highly qualified, usually with a PhD, with American businesses. And really what happened with it was I lost interest after a while when I couldn't figure out how to grow it. You know, it wasn't going to be the next Amazon. And at that point, I had already started my law practice and was kind of gaining traction. And just it was more like I couldn't devote my full energy to both. So I had to choose one or the other.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs grapple with that decision because mm-hmm. they have a lot of ideas. And then they finally realize that it's very hard to keep the energy going for several businesses at once.
I completely agree with that. In fact, one of the biggest red flags I see with entrepreneurs is juggling too many balls in the air and basically not giving some ideas the attention they deserve because they have so many other inferior ideas that they're, you know, trying to make work somehow. So, that was a mistake I made myself, but also I see a lot of entrepreneurs making, and I'm always quick to point it out to them when I see it.
Well, it's good to have your own experience that you can share with the clients. Because, having the MBA and the law degree, it's not just you can really leverage that skill and that experience and that education to give some business advice as well, not just pure legal advice.
Agreed. And I think it makes me a much better lawyer. And I also like to think it makes me unique in the Seattle marketplace.
Oh, there aren't that many people who offer both?
No, I don't think so. And I think one of the things I don't like about some of the lawyers I go up against is really they're not thinking about the business implications of the advice that they give. So,
you mean the law isn't black and white? Like you do this or nothing?
The law is incredibly gray for the most part. Very little that I deal with is black and white. It's always making strategic decisions and taking calculated risks.
I think that's a good way to look at it. So when someone is starting a business, what are some of the first legal issues that they have to think about?
Well, obviously, they have to think about the entity that's going to govern their business. That's usually the first thing they need to think about. And also, what do they have that they can protect from an intellectual property standpoint? And is it worth protecting anything? Are they ambitious enough that it's worthwhile to make a big investment in that up front?
Before we get into the intellectual property issues, which I want to bring up later in the show, what do you mean by legal entity? What are those options?
Well, for most businesses, there are many options, but for most businesses, it usually comes down between doing nothing and just being an at-law partnership or sole proprietorship, forming an LLC or forming a corporation with special S status that you often hear referred to as S-Corp.
And what is S status?
There are two types of corporations, and it's really just has to do with the IRS designation, and the S status gives you special tax advantages. And I don't want to get too bogged down in the details.
Yeah, let's not get into
that.
Oh my God, yeah. Think of what day it is today. When are taxes due?
And unfortunately,
I don't want to go there.
I have to go home myself and finalize my own taxes.
I'm doing an extension. So. You know, I do an extension every year. It's just
I might put it off myself.
I'm the master procrastinator when it comes to taxes.
Well, I think very few people enjoy doing taxes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's shocking to me.
I know. That's the biggest insight you'll hear today.
I'm speaking with Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. So one of the new laws, an act passed very recently called the Jumpstart Our Business Startups, or JOBS Act. It went into effect this week, and one of the more interesting aspects are the changes to crowdfunding. Now it's legal for companies to solicit money from millions of investors without all the registration documents normally required by the Securities and Exchange Commission. You probably, being that you work with startups, there are certain documents that need to be prepared if a company is raising money. Can you speak to that?
First of all, I'm very supportive of this law and the concept of making it easier for businesses to raise money because the securities laws really have a detrimental effect on a lot of smaller businesses that can actually have people interested in making money, but it's so expensive to comply with some of the rules, and the consequences were traditionally so steep for not complying with them. I think it did a great disservice to our entrepreneurial economy. In terms of what people need to be thinking about now that the law has changed, I mean, the law just went into effect. I actually have not had time to review it in detail. I do have some of my own clients that are using Kickstarter primarily, but
which is a crowdfunding online.
And so I've seen a positive change in my own business because I've seen some businesses that that otherwise probably would have difficulty getting off the ground actually.
So getting seed money even can be very challenging for a small business.
It is. And actually one of the things that I see a lot that kind of drives me crazy but is also instructive is too many people have big ideas and they think there's a lot of people out there willing to fund them. And that's almost never the case. And frankly, almost all businesses, regardless of ambition, should find ways to, you know, either through a bank or through friends and family to fund the business, or at least for the first couple of years. Don't wait to start something based on the idea that some white knight is going to come up out of the...
some angel, you might say.
An angel, a white knight,
or whoever
else. There are many of them out there, and they're deluged with possible ways to invest their money.
And to be honest, getting bank loans these days isn't so easy either.
Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. So, you know, I'm usually the bearer of bad news for a lot of these businesses when I say, hey, you know, put some of your own skin in the game. And frankly, skin in the game is going to help you interest other people. If you're, you know, you got to have a good idea and you can push it forward with your own money, that puts you in a better position.
It demonstrates that you actually believe in your own product or service.
Absolutely.
I mean, literally skin in the game. There are lots of do-it-yourself legal websites out there. I mean, being that they may start where they don't even have seed money yet, it is a little hard to afford an attorney.
It would be very self-serving of me to say, you know, the last place you should skimp on money is with an attorney, although I do actually believe that. I am no great fan of these legal sites like LegalZoom and some of the others.
Oh, really?
Frankly, I think a lot of stuff that's done on those sites would be better off not done at all. And I think sometimes that's actually a good alternative. If you can't afford to establish a relationship with a lawyer, hold off, you know?
What happens if you need a contract or something?
Well, I think one of the things I probably should have said at the beginning, when you have a new business, one of the things you should think about is you need to figure out your stakeholders and have clear agreements with them, basically establishing your expectations, whether it's customers, partners, the people you work with. That's, for most businesses that are going somewhere, it's very important to get that right.
That's the prenup.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, and LegalZoom isn't going to help you there. But
could it give you that start, and then you can have an attorney kind of review it?
You know, there probably are some things that it's good for, but I think a lot of what those sites do is just basically allow you to fill out forms which say automatically submit, or you know, to the extent it's reviewed by an attorney, you know, the type of attorney that's going to take that job is not someone you want reviewing your documents.
Oh, really? So
in
better
my opinion.
To start to be, okay, well, that's what you're here to share is your opinion. We've been speaking with attorney Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark. After the break, we'll be covering the topic of social media and the law. If you have questions for our guest, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll answer your questions on the air, and we will be back right after this.
And now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
Our show today is all about business law. I'm here with my guest, Danny Bronski, and we are going to talk about social media now. A lot of companies have concerns about social media and their legal obligations. What has been your experience in this area?
I mean, my personal experience is I'm not a big social media user myself, so I've kind of struggled to, you know, incorporate some of this, the concepts, and, you know, things are growing around me, and I'm trying to understand sometimes why they're happening.
From a personal level versus a business level?
From a business level, I think a lot of the issues with social media is really just it makes it much easier for you to hang yourself with your own rope. One anecdote I guess I am comfortable sharing is I once had one of the things I'm in the habit of doing is when I'm involved in a dispute as a lawyer to see if I can find out through social media if one of the people on the other side is giving something away. And a couple years ago, I brought a lawsuit on behalf of a company basically accusing an employee of stealing trade secrets. And the employee in question posted on his Twitter account, "Woot, woot, we're looting the company." So obviously it just gave me I struck gold with that one. And
it wasn't hard to find.
No, it was very easy to find. I think if you're looking for it, it's right out there in the open. People, I think, have gotten a little bit a little bit smarter in the last couple of years about social media. Some have.
There are still plenty of students that are posting their drinking photos, and then they go to get a job.
Yeah, and I think it's really easy to trip up there, and you really have to be thinking about the consequences of your actions.
So what was the result of that case?
Well, it settled, but it certainly helped us settle it much more favorably because it basically made it really easy to much easier to prove that he was doing what we were accusing him of.
You were able to use that information in a court of law then?
Yes.
So is all that kind of data
useful
in a court of law?
That can be an evidentiary issue that, the courts can handle differently.
And how have the courts been handling that?
Well, it's generally like anything else. If you're putting something out there publicly, it's free for, a lawyer to use as evidence.
And could someone just say, "Well, I was really just kidding"? it is social media. They said, I made that up.
Yes, but if it sounds like a silly argument, that's probably how a judge or jury would see it. Oh. So.
Okay, so it can work against you.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And do you have other experience with case studies, let's say with employees using social media?
Since I'm not an employment lawyer per se, I don't necessarily have to deal with some of these issues. But I definitely deal with confidentiality issues, whereas, I focus my clients on training their employees to be very wary of what they're willing to post on social media. And while I can't really talk about anecdotes there because of client
concerns. Because it's confidential.
Yes. This is an issue I've seen a lot, whereas employees of clients have posted things inappropriately, and then we're in a scramble to figure out what to do. But I think the smartest thing to do is just address it on a training level.
So put policies in place.
Yes.
And then regularly remind your employees of what these policies are, what can be shared, what cannot be shared.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something you didn't need to worry about a couple years ago.
And what legal aspects do you have to work into the policy? How would you actually write that, or what are some key things you need to put in there?
Well, I think it starts with a confidentiality agreement. If somebody's signing an employment contract, that basically they're agreeing to certain confidentiality provisions. But beyond that, a lot of it isn't so much what a lawyer does. It's about, emphasizing that and providing examples and really hammering the point home with employees. This is what you should do and should not do, just to put it in the forefront of their mind. So you make it less of an issue that lawyers have to deal with.
Would you suggest that someone write a policy and then have their lawyer look it over?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Obviously, it can depend on what the company's doing.
Of course, there are issues, gray areas there, but it can't hurt to have some legal advice about it. And would they go to someone like you to look that over? Or there might be another type of attorney that would be appropriate?
I don't really believe in social media attorneys.
And why is that?
I've seen some of it, and I kind of wonder what makes them a social media lawyer. Because really,
besides the fact that it's the buzzword.
Yeah, exactly. It's a way of marketing that doesn't necessarily speak to legal skills. So that's something I handle a lot, because a lot of employment agreements, when they're dealing with confidentiality issues and intellectual property issues, that's my bread and butter.
Okay. So, and speaking of copyright, what happens in social media with copyright? We heard in the beginning that if you pin something from Pinterest and you don't own it or something like that, I know you're not a specialist in Pinterest per se, but on the web there are copyright issues.
Yeah, and I think the technology and the internet move so quickly and the law moves so slowly that the law is really just, courts are figuring out how to deal with this stuff. And copyright law is a mess anyway.
And why do you say that?
Because it's just, resolving copyright disputes is almost always, they're almost always resolved in a gray area. It's very rarely, are there black and white rules for what you can and can't do with information? because of what's called a fair use exception.
What is that?
Well, it's fair use is basically when you can use content, somebody else's content that they quote unquote own, for certain purposes like social media or I'm sorry, not social media, for news, for parody, and a lot of other things. And a lot of your liability also depends upon how you're using it and how you're profiting from it. So with a site like Pinterest, obviously it's a very new site, and people are just trying to figure out the rules on you know, how to use content. And courts haven't looked at haven't necessarily laid good ground rules. And that's something that we'll see evolving in the next few years. But in general, the law and courts have not done a good job with keeping up with what to do and not do as the internet and technology evolves so quickly.
I'm here with Danny Bronski of Verit Trademark discussing social media and the law, and I'm Robin Block. If the laws are kind of gray, how would you advise a small business owner to err on the side of caution?
Ironically, I don't advise businesses to err on the side of caution, because being successful in business means taking risks. Just means taking smart risks. And you don't often see copyright litigation unless there's real money involved. And I think a lot of the litigation you do see gets widely criticized by people in the know. And it's tough to me to speak specifically about this, but ironically, a lot of IP lawyers seem to come down on the side of greater freedom of expression and copyright laws that are at least clearer, if not less restrictive. And you know, that's kind of personally how the side I come down on, where I think the law should move.
I see a lot of small businesses dealing with bad reviews. They feel maligned by them. Is there a point at which it makes sense to bring in an attorney to deal with that?
That is an issue I have dealt with many times. And this is not going to be an answer similar to the one I gave with LegalZoom, whereas you should definitely hire an attorney. I actually think you should speak to the customer and try to work it out with the customer and try to learn something about why the customer is criticizing you. And bring in an attorney as a last resort. So it should not be a knee-jerk reaction to basically threaten somebody who's basically expressing themselves in a way that you don't like, that usually ends badly.
I often talk about how the first thing you want to do on Yelp, for example, is find out who it is. Yep. Make sure you're signed up with Yelp, you own your page, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Try to communicate with them through messages. See what kind of damages or how damaging potentially they could be. Write to them, try to solve their issue, and then encourage that person to write a more positive review.
I think that's an excellent approach. And I think, you know, it really comes down to engaging with your customers in a smart manner.
But let's say, at what point do you get to the legal aspect? When does it get legal?
Well, I've personally seen cases where bad reviews have cost clients millions of dollars.
Really?
I'm not exaggerating.
Like what?
I can't talk about them.
But, okay.
I've seen multiple cases of that where reviews are very damaging, and but to have success using the court system to prevent them, you really have to show that that there's some defamation going on, that basically the person who's criticizing you is criticizing you through lies and other kinds of manipulations that. And it's not just a matter of trying to quiet somebody down who's, you know, we value the First Amendment greatly in the society, the ability to express oneself. And I think as a lawyer and as a business, you have to be very respectful of that. So there are certainly productive ways to bring in a lawyer, but it's again, an option of the last resort. And I think...
So if all else fails, if you try to communicate, if you try to create a good relationship with this customer and get them to write a positive review, then you might have to go a little bit further, but it depends.
Yeah, well, usually you can't do anything about just a negative review. It has to be defamatory. But I don't want to get into the definition of what defamation is, because it's kind of like copyright law where it's very mushy.
Very mushy.
But yeah, don't look to, you know, use a lawyer to hammer your customers.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that either. And that could be quite expensive, mm-hmm. I imagine. We've been speaking with Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark about the law and social media here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you have questions for our guest, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We will be right back after the break.
And now, we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Here's Robin.
Our show today is all about small business law. I'm here with my guest, Danny Bronski, and we are going to talk about intellectual property or IP. How do you define it?
Well, there are basically four specific forms of intellectual property. One is a patent, which protects an invention. Second is a trademark, which protects a brand, basically. Third is copyright, which protects expression of an idea. And the fourth is a trade secret, which is something, it's an invention that's not patentable, but because you kept it secret, it has certain rights, like the Coca-Cola formula is the most famous example that people think
of. I thought
that
secret was out already.
Maybe if it is, then they no longer have legal rights to it. So.
I'm kidding. I don't really know. It's been around a long time. How does a company recognize if they have IP?
Well, every company has it. And, you know, particularly with copyright, I mean, once you just put pen to paper and you write something, I mean, technically it's protected by copyright. Probably the better question is, when do you actually spend some money on a lawyer and spend a lot of your energy protecting this rather than just trying to sell widgets?
That is a better question.
And that depends so heavily on what type of business and how much funding you have and how much luxury you have to think about these issues. But I will say, so the most expensive and time-consuming way to protect intellectual property is via patent law. And I think here's an opinion that's pretty strong is a lot of smaller businesses that aren't well-funded still get caught up in getting a patent on something, and you know, this can run anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000, and you can get so myopically focused on that you kind of lose track of why you would want it in the first place, and you know, what is it really doing for your business? Is it, you know, is this kind of result? Because no form of intellectual property is kind of a magic wand that just is gonna make money roll in. It's, for the most part, it's really just augmenting what you already do that makes money and helping you prevent other people from taking your idea that you're making money with and making money themselves.
I've heard that if you can't afford to protect the patent, it may not be worth getting.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true for trademark law and even registering copyrights. It's true for all forms of intellectual property because ultimately it does take time and money to enforce some of these rights. They don't just enforce themselves. And it comes down to don't think that, you know, you have something magical when you have intellectual property. At the same time, if you're ambitious and you're growing a business that, you know, you want to sell, or you want some sort of exit, whereas either it's, you know, getting other investors or selling to a bigger company, a huge part of what you're selling, particularly if you're a tech company, almost everything that you're selling is intellectual property. Actually, that's true for consumer goods companies as well. Almost all the value of the company is going to be tied to trademarks. So getting those things done right can mean millions of dollars.
What does it cost generally in the beginning? Let's say you have a mark, your logo, your icon that goes with that. What does it cost to really mark that properly?
I would say $1,000 to $2,000, but we can really get bogged down in the details.
Yeah, I just wanted a general number of what that can be, using an attorney to do it for you.
Yeah. I mean, I offer a service that gets as low as $7.95.
But I like the 95
But it can go way up from
there.
We'll
throw in the $5. You know, it'd be good. And that would that give you protection both in the U.S. and internationally?
It doesn't. Trademarks and pretty much all forms of intellectual property are jurisdiction-specific, meaning every government is going to regulate it differently. When you're expanding internationally, you're going to have to basically every country that you're doing business in is going to deal with the intellectual property in a different way. And some are going to respect some of the American laws, particularly when it comes to patents. But when it comes to trademarks, you really have to protect it in each country. And one of the things I see is when businesses kind of start out domestically and then they want to do deals with more established companies that have consumer goods in all these different countries, oftentimes they won't do business with you unless you've thought about and taken steps to trademark some of your brands in these other countries.
I'm here with attorney Danny Bronski, and you're listening to Minding Your Business, the show created for small business here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Do you have any legal questions for my guest? And they will be answered cautiously. Facebook or tweet us at MYB Media or call 866-712-1300. Do only tech firms have intellectual property?
No, every business has intellectual property. I think tech firms have certain types of intellectual property issues that are more characterizable. And I think that's why sometimes I market myself as a tech lawyer, because I'm familiar with a lot of the issues that certain types of tech companies deal with. But I certainly have plenty of clients that do other things and actually make stuff.
So where do you, in your own business, where do you look for the intellectual property value?
Well, I think it comes in one of those four categories. So with a patent in particular, you only have a certain amount of time. Like when you invent something, you basically have a year to seek patent protection on that. All the other forms are much more fluid. And so with a trade secret, for example, it's mostly a matter of getting the policies in place to make sure that people know not to share this information. Because once it's shared and once it's kind of out there in the public, it loses its value and it loses your ability to protect it.
How do you think Coca-Cola, for example, has been able to prevent people from actually sharing what they know? I mean, you could fire somebody after the fact, but how do you actually prevent that from slipping out?
Well, they have very sophisticated policies in place for that. And I know that they've gone to court a number of times when people have threatened to leak the formula. I'm sure that they spend millions upon millions of dollars to do everything in their power to keep that secret. From my perspective, one of the things I have seen, and I'm not going to name some of these companies, but I've seen bigger companies doing business with my client that used dirty tactics to try to get at some formulas and some things that have value that, you know, in the process of doing business with them, you really have to work hard to prevent, because once you let a trade secret out of the bag, it loses all its value.
We were talking about where do you look for value. So we talked about trade secrets. What about data?
That's hard
like
to answer.
Customer
that list,
that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, the customer list can be a trade secret. I think with most smaller businesses and even growing businesses, most of the value is going to be tied up in trademarks. Copyright is something where it's easy to do. It's a lot of just dotting the I's and crossing the T's to get certain things copyrighted and protecting the expression of ideas. But, you know, if you're growing, you know, you might have some real value in patents and trademarks to protect your brand and basically prevent others from, not prevent, because you still have to actually go out and stop them. But the idea is you're kind of staking claim to a space in people's minds, and stuff that's too similar for you know, the mark itself, the logo or the word or the phrase is very similar, and the goods and services are also similar, that it's not just about protecting something precise. It's about protecting, you know, a range of ideas around that.
There was a case recently with Starbucks, mm-hmm. and then a coffee roaster up in, I think it was Vermont. We did the story on the show several months ago, and they actually won the case, even though the name sounded similar. But Starbucks actually lost, even though they had deep pockets.
Yeah, Starbucks and Microsoft have been pretty aggressive about enforcing rights in their name.
Against small business, though. I think it was called Charbucks.
I think it was Maine. And,
Maine.
Vaguely
sorry.
Familiar
Close
with,
enough.
And I looked into this, I really shouldn't speak to this, my opinions on this, because I'm going from memory. But it's trademark litigation is very fact-specific, and I think in that case, Charbucks wasn't really being used as a trademark, and it wasn't really calling... consumers weren't going to be thinking that Starbucks was affiliated or sponsoring that brand, and that's ultimately where they ran into problems, as I remember it.
Yes, I think that's close enough. People can always go listen to one of our shows where we actually talked about that. Our show today is all about small business law. I'm here with my guest, Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark. How has the value of intellectual property changed over the years?
Well, I think the internet has been very disruptive. So the last 20 years, there's been a major change in the importance of intellectual property to our economy, because so much of the value that even the biggest companies have exists in our mind, and exists in certain ways of doing things that they have, and in the case of patents. So stuff has really exploded in the last 15 years. In terms of both registrations of patents and trademarks, and also the value of some of these.
How has the internet affected that, though? You said it had a big impact.
Well, it has a huge impact with trademarks because, whereas before you could have a business in Main Street in Vermont that had a certain name or logo that nobody knew about, and now they have a website, and basically anybody can see it. Yeah, so it makes it easier for very local businesses to be global. And a lot of these businesses, have some power over people's minds with, the brands that they use. And a business that really they wouldn't even have known about 20 years ago now could be competing with them for the same customers very easily.
Right. So from a legal standpoint, what needs to happen to protect it, to defend it?
I think you not only have to protect it, and sometimes in different ways. Like if you have a name and a logo, that's actually three potential trademarks. It's the name itself, it's the image itself, and then it's the two combined. And it's often up to the business and the business's lawyers as to what extent they want to go and protect all of that. But then not only do you have to protect it, but you actually have to proactively enforce it and be looking for others out there that are seeking to exploit the value of it for their own ends.
It was kind of like what we talked about before, and you also had mentioned at the break that some people are offering trademarks, but it's kind of a fraudulent thing that's happening.
Yeah, what I was talking about kind of relates to the whole legal zoomification of the legal system, which is
legal zoomification.
you have these companies, and it started with domain names and I think Yellow Pages, where they send you fake invoices. Well, they look like real invoices, but it's,
I've gotten one. I mean, I've gotten several, and I've taught in my classes frequently when you get those things that say, hey, you need to register your domain for another 5 years, and it's going to cost you X, and here's the bill.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you've signed up with the host. You'll be getting emails from your host, or you've signed up for automatic renewal. So those are just total.
But usually, at least with domain names, they're maybe $60. With trademark law, it's $500 to $1,000. And a lot of my clients are being fooled by this. And, I'm really having to focus my clients on it. Really, if you're hiring me to do a trademark, you shouldn't be paying anybody else.
I'm here with Danny Bronski, and we've been talking about legal issues for startups and growing businesses here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. If you have ideas or comments, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll answer your questions on the air. We'll be back shortly, and we will be talking about some more social media things, how Danny markets his business, and do intellectual property rights get in the way of innovation? We'll be right back. I'm here with my guest, Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark, talking about small business law. We were talking about patents and copyrights and that kind of thing, and it seems that once you apply, somebody is hearing about it. Somebody out there in the universe is finding out, and they're sending you fraudulent stuff. How does that happen?
Well, when you apply for a patent, trademark, or copyright, you're transmitting a lot of personal information that basically anybody can access. And hucksters are getting increasingly sophisticated at using this information to confuse you into paying for things that have no value. And I've noticed this has really exploded in popularity with respect to trademark law in the last year. And I've had a number of clients getting duped into paying bills of $500 up to a couple thousand.
Can you try to get that money back?
You can, and actually the Patent and Trademark Office has even started to address the problem. They recently, in the most recent registration certificate I got, they sent out a notice basically saying, watch out for this stuff. And I've never seen that before. But
they've obviously noticed. Must be a bigger problem.
Yeah, and like I said, I've seen my own clients get fooled.
So get that replicated across the country, it becomes a big problem.
Yes. So money is being made on this. And as to whether you can get a refund, I mean, obviously that's a case-by-case situation. But
some of the other things you see on television are those, if you're an inventor,
yeah,
write to us and we'll help you with your whatever. What do you think of those?
Kind of like what I said earlier with LegalZoom. I think, I've never seen a success story. I've never seen somebody use one of those services and make a lot of money on the patent that they get from it. Not to say that it doesn't happen. I'm sure that it has happened. But I think you're better off, in some cases, doing nothing, but kind of more strategically, just forming a good relationship with a lawyer that you trust, who you can trust to help you make the best decisions with your money, both spending on the lawyer and spending on registering intellectual property.
Yeah, some of those ads are they're very compelling.
Yeah, I don't watch TV myself, so I think it's probably been a decade since I've seen one of those ads. So I don't know how they've changed.
Well, but with everyone, there's so many people starting small businesses now, and everybody has stars in their eyes about their own invention that I think they've started to crop up again. People are having trouble finding jobs and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think people would, and not just legal advisors, a lot of businesses would just be better off getting a team of people that they trust that that will work with them to advance their best interests, and not any of these fly-by-night services or even more established services.
I think a lot of small businesses would love to tap into legal advice, but they often find it so expensive.
And I agree, it can be expensive. But it's like any other kind of product or service. You know, you can get 10 times your investment back, or you can just throw a lot of money away.
Yeah, there are trade-offs between the two.
Yeah, and a lot of it just depends on what lawyer you're working with.
Continuing our discussion about intellectual property rights, do you think they often get in the way of innovation?
Unfortunately, I do think that they often get in the way of innovation. I think in particular our copyright law, well, there's been recent changes to our patent law that the repercussions are kind of being felt, or we'll know in a couple of years how the sweeping changes in law are going to affect everything. But I think a lot of our laws, first of all, they were established a couple hundred years ago when, you know, people who established them had no idea
how to use. Before the internet, you mean?
Yeah. And I think the second thing is, particularly with copyright, you have, you know, really large interests, like say the estate of X musician, for example, who basically just wants to keep getting a dime every time.
Royalties.
And is that really protecting innovation to basically give the heirs of that musician rights to make money in perpetuity? So I think it's particularly a problem with copyright, and we're seeing a lot with the recent bills, SOPA and
the new one that's out. What is
it? CISPA.
Yeah, I just read about that this morning.
Yeah.
Well, SOPA didn't pass, of course.
It didn't, but I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of legislators advancing bills that they know where they don't understand the repercussions of those bills.
I don't think they really even understand the technology implications either.
Yeah, they don't. It's pretty clear that they don't, and I think that that's a major problem. And I think that a lot of the bills we're introducing that supposedly advance innovation hinder it. So that's unfortunate. And I make my money on the system too, so I don't want to be too vigilant in biting the hand that feeds me. I do believe in intellectual property. I think any great society and business culture has to respect it. But
once again, it's gray area.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword, and you have to be really careful about
restricting it too much, perhaps. I was also looking at some other things about how genomes, it started off where you could protect a gene, and now it's gone back the other way, and so you can't really protect it. Do you think it's going to keep waffling, going back and forth?
I think the law is pretty slow to adapt to when there's major changes in society and the way things are invented, and the courts don't always get it right the first time around. I'm not really all that familiar with that case, but one of the other things I think about are seed patents.
Oh, with and, Monsanto.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's a big problem.
I see you rolling your eyes.
Yes,
I'll let you
I
do
am.
The eye rolling for me. Yeah. I'm not a patent specialist, so, I'm probably not the best person to talk about this, but...
do have an opinion about it.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that the law is often slow to adapt to changes in society and then also sometimes adapts in the wrong way or to advance the interests of, those with money over the interests of...
A farmer, perhaps.
Most people in society.
And the people who have to eat their food. Yes, I totally get that. What should startups and growing companies be watching for in terms of new laws coming down the pike?
I think one of the things you alluded to earlier with the crowdfunding, I would like to see even more legislation that makes it easier for companies to raise money legitimately without having to comply with arcane rule system. So we might see that. There have also been major changes in the patent system in the last year, and I think over the course of the next decade, we're going to see big changes in patent law. I can't really predict how that's going to go, but I know that we will see changes.
You can't? I'm shocked.
So those are two things. But even more generally, I think for small businesses, they can't really worry about the big things. They need to worry about defining and protecting their own intellectual property, adapting a good approach to resolving disputes, and just getting clear agreements where, whether it's their shareholders or partners or customers, that there is a shared understanding of what each of them expects. And, that's the key to success.
Good tips from our guest today, Danny Bronski. Looks like we're out of time, though. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Danny Bronski of Vera Trademark. For more information about his services, visit veratrademark.com. My guest next week is Wally Bell of Fair Labor Solutions. He'll be joining us to discuss what small businesses need to know about setting labor policy both here and abroad. Be sure to send us your questions ahead of time. For an archive of today's program, links to our guests' websites, or to sponsor this show, check out mybmedia.com. And remember to join us on our Facebook page and on Twitter at mybmedia. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
You've been listening to Minding Your Business with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.